Okay, let's go ahead and get started. We have a lot to cover today. And as always, whenever I start to look over our notes and what we're going to cover in class, I get really excited. excuse me. I think I'm fighting a little bit of a cold today, so if I'm clearing my throat, that's why. So I wanted to start today by just asking you guys for any – oh, I think Jess is on. Jess, is that you? Hi, Jess, is that you?
Oh, hey, Carrie.
Hey, okay, good. We were just waiting for you.
I'm sorry. Good morning.
No, it's okay. It's okay. No problem. I was just saying we would give you a couple minutes, and I was just starting. So I wanted to start today by checking in. We'll always have a check-in at the beginning of class, and just ask for your comments, your questions, if you have any shares, maybe any aha moments, anything that kind of spoke to you over the last week in regards to our coaching call and maybe your yoga practice or in your everyday conversations with people, if anything stood out.
So I'm sorry that you're asking me, like everyone already went. Sorry.
No, but you can go ahead. And just a reminder, because next week, you guys, we will have three more people that are joining us. They couldn't join these first two calls. So especially as more people, the larger number that there is in the class, make sure that you say your name before you speak, and then if you could go ahead and answer the question. And remember that interrupting is totally okay. That's just part of being on a conference call and in this kind of a class format.
Okay.
Jess, go ahead.
Okay, this is Jess. I think what was kind of perhaps a connection was the part that we read over our reading this last week of developing your unique voice. And reading that and going through the training of yoga, becoming a teacher, it was really nice to kind of see a correlation of, you know, you develop your voice authentically as a teacher, but also as a mentor. And then going through it, like your energy, your tone, your pace and rhythm, your inflection. And it was really neat to kind of see how both, both things kind of really were parallel with each other.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah,
it is huge. That's a big parallel because same thing in yoga teacher training. And I know that, Pat, you are embarking on that journey. But especially with any kind of a profession, you find your own voice, really. You find your own style, your way of interacting with your clients, and that makes you unique and makes you special. And it's the same thing in coaching. There's not a lot of black and white as far as styles of coaching go. There are some guidelines, like this first portion of the class, I'm going to give you guys the science of coaching. So we'll be sticking really closely to a coaching model. And then once you start to get comfortable with the coaching model and how the flow of a coaching session really goes, then you start to play around with finding your own unique voice and your style. Some coaches are really soft and compassionate, and then other coaches are really blunt and to the point. And either one is great. It's okay. And I encourage you guys as you go through this process to start to question, like, what's your style? And especially as we listen to different coaching sessions and whatnot, you'll see the difference between coaches and their style of coaching as well. Great.
Well, this is Heidi. Comment on that. Actually, I found that throughout my teacher, when I've been a teacher, it's a lot different than how I like to practice. And I wasn't expecting that going into it. I thought, this is how I like to practice, this is how I want to teach. But when I end up teaching, it's completely a different flow, a different feel to it, and I had to trust that and just go with it and kind of reflect back each class I would teach. It would be a little different, and I had to kind of check in with myself and also with my students to give me feedback and say, I wasn't intending to have this class be maybe a little bit more relaxing, and I end up having that kind of a flow every time I end up teaching. So it was just took me by surprise.
Great. And part of that, too, is probably reading the energy of the room, right? Responding intuitively as a teacher in the yoga studio. And it's the same in coaching, is responding intuitively. Listening between the lines is one of those coaching skills. And you guys read about this over, if you did your reading over this last week, and it's a coaching skill, is being able to respond intuitively and read between the lines, pick up on the energy, and adjust as you need to. And we do the same thing in class if we're teaching, or even if we're taking as a yoga student, right? We might, our practice can be different day to day. We might have a really solid, kind of powerful, a lot of muscular energy, that kind of a class one day, and then we may go into class with an expectation that that's the kind of practice we're going to have the next day, and we don't. You know, we listen to our bodies, and that's really being in the moment and taking it in stride, and it's the same in coaching. So the less you plan, or I'll take that back, the less expectation you have in coaching, the better as a coach. You go in with what we call a blank screen or going blank so that you can be really present with your client. And I feel like that's kind of what you're saying, Heidi, about teaching too, is that sometimes you have to adjust along the way and
yeah,
the energy of the room.
Yeah, and having trusting that as well. Not feeling like
that.
You have to overthink it or
yes. I love
feeling unprepared.
Yes, trusting your intuition. It's huge. Great. Anyone else? Any shares, any comments, questions, aha moments?
Hi, this is Pat. And again, in working with my massage clients yesterday, I had an aha moment. Your intuition is so valuable, and in working with her yesterday, I just blurted out something, and she almost started crying because it was right on target. And I guess I've learned to honor my intuition and go with it. I think that's very important in this one too, like you said, listen to it and trust it.
Great. Awesome. I love that you all are able to draw upon these skills that you already have and in trusting your intuition and being able to navigate the process of finding your voice, that those are huge. And to have awareness of those two things as we move forward in learning the coaching model and learning more about the coaching process is really important. Great. Okay. I wanted to start class today with a breathing exercise that most of you are probably familiar with, and it's alternate nostril breathing. And I guess I'll just ask, has anyone not participated in this type of a breathing exercise before?
I haven't. This is
okay. Great. So I'll just give you a little bit of background on it, and it's just great to know the purpose of it. So again, it's called alternate nostril breathing. It's a type of breathing exercise, pranayama exercise, and it basically balances out the right and left hemispheres of the brain. So if you think about water, a water faucet, when you're trying to create that perfect temperature, that warm water, you don't want it to be too hot, you don't want it to be too cold, you just want to have a really nice warm temperature. It's kind of the same thing. You adjust the right a little bit, you adjust the left, you adjust the cold, you adjust the hot, and then you get that perfect temperature. It's the same with your alternate nostril breathing, is it really brings balance to the mind, literally on a neurological level. So the right nostril, oh, and it also brings balance to the nervous system. That's huge. And the right nostril dominates or stimulates the sympathetic nervous system, which is arousal-producing, and the left nostril dominates the relaxation-producing or the rest and digest mode, and that's the parasympathetic nervous system. Also important to note, and you guys will start to see why this is also important today, when we inhale, that's inviting an energy, right? That we need the inhale. And we can think of it, it's more the sympathetic nervous system, the inhale. It's the arousal producing. And that's important. We need that, right? We need that to, like, kind of get going. And we also need that if we need to be on watch for some reason. And then the left nostril, I said, stimulates the relaxation producing. The exhale breath is what flips the switch on the nervous system into rest and digest mode. The exhale breath is the parasympathetic nervous system. That's what it correlates with, okay? So by balancing out our inhale, balancing out our exhale, that creates an equilibrium in the two branches of the nervous system, a balance between that excitation and relaxation response, arousal producing, relaxation producing. When you do this breathing exercise, which we're about to do, the alternate nostril breathing, the right nostril dominates arousal, the left nostril dominates relaxation. So by balancing it out and moving back and forth, that creates an equilibrium in the two branches of the nervous system too. It literally balances out right brain and left brain. So if we're operating more from right brain, it'll balance it out. If we're operating more from left brain, it'll balance it out. So we have more of a balanced mindset. We have more open-mindedness. And it also helps to deepen the breath. And we all know that shallow breathing, it can lead to lots of health problems. But it also can increase stress and anxiety, shallow breathing can. And then that gives us more closed-mindedness. So we talk about, like, someone being in tunnel vision and not being able to see outside possibilities outside of whatever they're focusing on. So breathing, simple breathing exercise, literally helps to create more expansiveness in a person's mind. It helps them to shift, give them that space that they can shift their focus into I'm stuck, into, oh, there's a possibility here, there's an opportunity here. And that's one way that breathing exercises and meditation, you can start to see this, is really an important tool in your coaching sessions, and it's an important skill to model, or practice, I should say, to model for your clients and to introduce them to this so that they can take it into their everyday life. So we're going to start right now, and go ahead and just prepare yourself. You can get into a comfortable position, take some deep breaths. If you want to close your eyes, you can close your eyes. And we'll start with closing off the left nostril. And I like to use my ring finger and my thumb. So you'll just use one hand, and you'll close off your left nostril, and then exhale completely through your right nostril. Inhale completely through your right nostril. Pause at the top. Close off your right, exhale through your left. Inhale through your left, pause at the top, close off your left, exhale through your right. Inhale through your right, pause at the top, close off your right, exhale through your left. I'm going to let you go at your own pace. Moving back and forth, breathing in, breathing out, increasing energy, vitality, creating centeredness, balance in the nervous system, in the brain. Recommended to repeat this about 20 times. And in the next couple rounds that you do, see if you can deepen your inhale and deepen your exhale. Begin to notice that your inhale and your exhale start to even out. They become more balanced. End with exhaling through the right nostril. Close your eyes, breathe in and out a couple times. Notice the increased blood flow. Notice just how you're feeling, the increased energy flow. Just let your breathing come back to its natural state. And then open your eyes, wiggle your toes, wiggle your fingers, maybe reach your arms up overhead, take a big stretch, and then come back to center. Any comments or questions on alternate nostril breathing? How do you guys feel after doing that?
Hi, Carrie, it's Jess. I feel after that very open, very settled, and really like, you know, what we touched on, balanced mindfully and more aware, which is really cool.
Good. Great. I agree. I always feel that way after doing a breathing exercise, especially alternate nostril breathing. It's one of those exercises that I really like to do personally. Anyone else?
I feel really open, centered would be important.
Great. Thank you both. So all of those words are really important. Open, centered, balance, more mindful, more aware. And that's a shift that is really important to achieve in our coaching sessions. And you can see how starting a coaching session, if your client is comfortable with it, with a type of meditation or breathing exercise, it can kind of do that for you quickly, right? It can create that openness that we need to create or we need to help facilitate in our sessions anyway for change to occur, for our clients to start shifting perspectives. And that's just a great example of even if your client goes and takes a yoga class before they come to a coaching session, they'll be in a different mindset, a different mind frame. We all know that. We all know how we come out of class feeling like a new person after breathing and stretching our bodies. All of a sudden, it's not that our bodies are just open, but remember, whatever happens to the body happens to the mind. Whatever happens to the mind happens to the body. All of a sudden, our mind is more expansive. We're more open to possibility thinking. And possibility thinking is the shift that we want to create in our coaching sessions. We want our clients to move from focusing on a problem and focusing on being stuck to starting to explore possibility. That's one way to kind of fast forward into that open-mindedness is by using your breathing exercises. Okay, I wanted to go back, and today I'll explain this first. Today's session is going to be highly interactive. We don't have a coach-the-coach session until next week. Next week we'll start our coach-the-coach sessions, and don't worry about that. I will make sure that you guys are all set up and ready to go for that. I'll speak to that a little bit later on. But today I'm going to be asking a lot of questions, and the more that we all jump in and answer these questions and share our experience and share our thoughts, the better, the more takeaway we will all have. Like I said before, we all have so much to learn from each other and to offer. The more that we put in, the more that we'll get out of this experience altogether. So with that said, before the start of our first class, I had asked a question and asked you all to kind of take some time to journal on it and be ready to share. And the question was, how does yoga facilitate a quest for growth, transformation, and self-discovery? How does yoga facilitate a quest for growth, transformation, and self-discovery? So I'd like to open it up right now. It can be words that come to mind. It can be one sentence. It can be an explanation. It can be a phrase.
Hi, this is Heidi. I wrote out a lot for this one, but I think the majority of what I was trying to say is that in your yoga class, it brings us into the moment. It helps us become aware of what's happening right now in our bodies and our minds and how it's connected. And by bringing that awareness to the front of your mind, you can take responsibility for whatever's coming up, and you can then either deal with it or breathe through it or whatever it is. And I think that allows you to have some reflection, and only in those moments can we take it to the next level or address it. And I think that a lot of times we get stuck because we don't bring it up enough to actually deal with it or to listen to our own selves. So I think that in this culture is a lot of numbing behaviors, whether it's self-medicating or, you know, just going out and ignoring your problems a little bit and by distracting yourself. And with yoga, it really brings you to the moment and that awareness.
Great. Love it. Thanks for sharing that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone else want to add anything or comment? So the question, how does yoga facilitate a quest for growth and transformation and self-discovery? And exactly what Heidi was saying, that self-discovery piece is huge. Yoga is about self-exploration, and that self-exploration piece is huge. It leads to self-expression, living in alignment with what's right for you, what's true to your morals and values, what's best for your highest self, right? And if we're moving so fast all the time or we're numbing out, we're not taking the time to really sit and question and be in stillness or be in the moment, then we miss out on all those opportunities for self-reflection. And we miss out on all those opportunities for developing our own intuition, our own inner knowing, and trusting within. So that's huge, and that was all really, really well stated. I agree completely with you, Heidi. And the one thing that you said is that it brings us into the moment, and that's kind of our focus today. It's one of the most important and most foundational coaching skills that we have. That's why we start, and that's why we're going to spend a lot of time on it. It will start to make sense as we go through the coaching model, too, and it's the fact that being present is really, really important as a coach, and you're modeling that for your client as well. You're modeling and you're helping them to find presence as well. So let's move on to the next question. How do we develop trust with our students as yoga teachers? And again, if you're not a yoga teacher, think in terms of what does a teacher do, and it can be a teacher, a mentor, a coach, any kind of teacher, what does that person do to help you trust them more or to kind of create that bond, that connection?
Hey, Carrie, it's Jess. I guess my answer to that would be authenticity. To have a teacher be present and fully aware, like at that moment, like you said earlier, coming in with that blank slate or really listening, and then with authenticity in the voice and behavior in response to you as a student, for me personally, it really builds a very strong bridge of trust.
Great. So those two questions so far that we've answered, how does yoga facilitate a quest for growth and how do we develop trust with our students as yoga teachers? You can see that presence and authenticity, awareness, those are key components. They're really, really important. It's the same in coaching. It's the same in coaching. The last question here, how are we catalysts as teachers in yoga? And you can think about even just giving a specific example. Maybe you have a specific example where a teacher in your life, and again, it doesn't have to be a yoga instructor, but how was someone a catalyst? Their influence or their presence in your life kind of acted as a catalyst for growth.
Hi, this is Pat again, and I think that being a catalyst as a teacher is basically listening. You listen with your touch, you listen with your eyes, you listen with your heart, and I think it just falls into place.
I love that. I've never heard listening described that way, even though I know that. I love that. You listen with your eyes, you listen with your touch, and you listen with your heart. They feel that. They feel the energy behind your words when you're listening. Great. That's awesome. Listening. So the words that stick out to me as we move through answering these questions are listening, being fully aware, present, and authentic. And all of those things, those embody this foundational skill of a coach, which is being fully present in your sessions with your clients, being fully present in each and every moment. If you're thinking about what you want to say, you're not present. You're in your head and you're not in the moment, and your client will feel that disconnect. This skill, being present, is one of the hardest skills I have found through teaching this course with new coaches. One reason can be because we're worried about our performance as a coach. We're worried about maybe having the right answer, wanting to fix the problem. And when we're in those modes of, performance mode, or wanting to have the right answer, wanting to fix, wanting to ask the next best question, then we're in our heads and we're not fully present with our client. Presence is one of the greatest gifts that you can give to anyone. I completely agree with what Heidi said, that in our society today, there's just not a lot of presence. I mean, especially think about it with Facebook and computers and iPads and our phones and text messaging, everything, right? We're distracted all the time. So there's something to be said, and it's really refreshing in a coaching session to just be present with your client and literally listen to everything that they're saying, because that's where the golden nuggets are, in the present moment. They're not in preparing ahead of time for your client or being really attached to what the outcome of the session is going to be. It's in the present moment and being unattached. In coaching, we talked about how there is a focus. So there's three words. If you guys have a piece of paper, I want you to write down these three words. And the first word is focus. The second word is scope. And the third word is process. So we're going to continue to draw some parallels here. We're going to continue to draw upon what you already know about coaching from your experience with practicing yoga or teaching yoga. So in coaching, there's a focus, and that's determined by the client. What kind of focus would there be in a class, whether you're taking a class or teaching a class? And anybody can just, like, jump in here.
Hey, Carrie, it's Jess. The first word that comes to mind is intention.
Awesome. Intention. Great. And that was my next question is, what do we usually call the focus in a yoga class? And it's intention. So can anyone give an example of an intention, what an intention could be in a yoga class?
Encourage Jessica.
That's okay, go on. It's okay. Keep going. I'll start calling on everybody, too, just to kind of mix it up. But it's okay, Jess. Go ahead.
I don't know. The first one that came to mind was breath. You know, today we're going to, our intention is to focus on prana.
Great. Awesome. Okay. So the intention also can be what the teacher's setting, right? But then if we think about the students, it's going to be, it could be their own reason for coming to class. Like maybe somebody's coming to class for a physical reason. Maybe somebody's coming to class because they're running and their muscles are really tight and they want to improve their running stride. Maybe somebody's coming to class because somebody suggested that they should because the meditation and the breathing will help them mentally. So there's different reasons that our students come to class, right? There's different reasons why Pat's massage clients come to her. It might be for grounding. It might be for relaxation, or it might be for working on healing some physical ailment. There's lots of different reasons that our students come to class. Another focus in a class can be like a sequence up to a peak posture, right? Working on where they are in the process. The students are working on where they are in the yoga process, and it might be that they're working on an arm balance, or it might be that they're working on building up the strength for that arm balance. And my point with that is that our yoga practice always meets us where we're at. It's the same in coaching. In coaching, you always meet your client where they're at. That's why it's so important to let go of expectations as a coach and to try to not be attached to an outcome. Because when you're unattached to the outcome, it's focused on the client, and it allows the coaching to meet the client where he or her is at in their life. It's just like in yoga when we say, this is your practice. I'm just here to guide you. Listen to your body. It's the same in coaching. This is your coaching session. I'm here to guide you through this process and help you and co-create. But listen to yourself. So if we think of the focus, it's the focal point of the class. It can be in the intention, the reason the student's coming to class, and it basically has to do with their overall experience, where they are at in their life, where they are at that day. Same in coaching. It's going to be different day to day, week to week with your clients. Okay, the next word. In coaching, there is a scope, okay? So let's refer back to yoga. What does that mean in yoga, that there's a, yoga is addressing the scope? What does that mean to you guys? So think even about the word scope. What does scope mean? And I'll give you guys a hint. Does it just address the mind? Does it just address the body? Our yoga practice?
I would guess it, this is Pat again, I would guess mm-hmm. it would be the same as massage, which is mind, body, and soul.
Excellent. Yes, yes, yes. So in coaching, there's a scope, meaning it addresses the whole person. So think about your yoga. It addresses mind, body, spirit. Same thing in massage. If you think about the word yoga, what it means is it means wholeness, really. It means to yoke, to bring together, to connect. And same thing in coaching. It's the integration of mind, body, and spirit. The last word is process. And I'm just going to go ahead and answer this one for you guys. If we think about how yoga is a process, it kind of sums up focus and scope, too. It addresses the whole person. It meets the person where they're at. It can change from moment to moment, day to day. I think about how we say the posture never ends in yoga. There's no perfect posture. It's different for everyone. As soon as we think we've arrived in a posture, there's some adjustments to be made. We think about yoga and how it's a process, and it's a process about creating space in the physical body. But remember, going back to that word scope, it addresses the whole person. The process also creates space in the mind, the body, and the spirit. Yoga is all about growth. It's about the expansion of the mind, the expansion of the body. Every step along the way matters. And even the steps back, there's lessons there. If you think of alignment, coming into alignment, finding what works for you and what doesn't work for you, that's a process. And just like our yoga is a process, and that's why it's called a yoga practice, coaching is the same. Coaching is a process. It's a practice. Yoga's movement forward. Forward movement in every aspect, thinking about the whole. Coaching is about forward movement. It's about moving your client from problem to possibility. Questions or comments on those parallels? Okay, everybody, if you have your manuals out in front of you, go ahead and turn to page 51 and 52. Balancing doing with being. This is our focus for today. This is our intention for today's class. And I also call it how you show up. So how you show up as a coach is the most important thing. Being present, all of going back to all those words that you guys brought up, fully aware, present, authentic. You listen with your eyes, your touch, your heart, presence, all of those things. And the very first sentence on this page is, you can accomplish any endeavor more easily and effectively when you are fully present. Being fully present requires a disciplined self-awareness as a mentor coach, void of the distractions of past events, future tasks, and distracting tangents. Resist the temptation to fix the client's problem, but instead draw out important details and respectfully support the client to explore the issue rather than find an answer. This is the most foundational coaching skill and the most important coaching skill, and it's something that you'll have to practice as a coach over and over and over again to make it your default mode in your coaching sessions. So think about when you first started practicing yoga or your first yoga class and your teacher asked you to focus only on breath, let go of all the distractions, let go of your to-do list, and you were able to do that for like a second maybe. Right? I mean, in some days I'm still there, right? I'm like, okay, if I can do that for 3 seconds today, that's good. I know you guys know what I'm talking about. And it's the same in coaching. You come back to your breath. You come back to the present moment over and over and over again. When you first start coaching, you're going to find that you're in your head. And part of that is the learning process because you're learning these skills. You're learning these tools. You're learning how to ask open-ended questions, how to ask really powerful questions in the moment. So you are going to be a little bit more in your head at first. However, over time, being fully present, practicing that, that is really the most effective coaching tool that you have in your back pocket. So over time, that will come with practice and repetition is, okay, back to the moment, back to listening to what my client's saying. I'm not going to think about fixing their problem. I'm not going to think about what the next question is I'm going to ask. I'm not going to think about finding an answer, because then you're in your head and you're not present with your client. You're going to miss maybe a verbal cue that they're giving, or a shift in their voice that kind of indicates there's a coachable moment there, a shift in the energy. So in our yoga, in our coaching sessions, we want to be with our client. And that's how we find the powerful questions. That is how we're able to hold the space where our client can shift into seeing things a different way with a different perspective. Okay, so we're going to read together. Look down on the bottom page of the page 51. Balancing doing with being contributes to these shifts. From doing coaching and performing to being present with your client and connecting. We're shifting from fixing clients' problems to drawing solutions from the client's wisdom. When we're present, we're shifting from thinking about what we're going to say, and instead we're listening intently to our client. When we're present, you can turn the page, we're moving from struggling to prove or sell our expertise into building a reputation for listening, or I would say building trust and really creating that authenticity piece, developing that. In being present, we're moving away from trying to manipulate clients to use you or to rely on you, and instead believing the value of what you do, knowing it inherently. And another way to think of that comparison is by being present, you're also believing in your client. You're showing them that you believe in them, and you're also showing them how to trust their own intuition and to be present themselves. When we're present with our clients, we move from being attached to certain outcomes and instead to being open-minded. When we are present with our clients, we move from feeling overwhelmed with the process, like, oh my gosh, this client is coming to me with a really emotionally loaded agenda. Like, it's a really intense. Take a deep breath, get present, and then you'll go from being overwhelmed with how am I going to solve this for my client, into trusting the process and moving forward, trusting the process and moving forward, one breath, one step at a time. So we focus on the doing of coaching and building your coaching expertise that can result in that anxiety, perfectionism, and doubt about the effectiveness of what you're doing. I used to feel like that when I taught yoga. I felt like, oh my gosh, I'm worried about if this person likes my class, if this person likes my music, if this person likes my theme, and that person's modifying the posture. I wonder if they're bored. And then I would walk out of teaching a yoga class, and I would be exhausted. When you're present and teaching, what I found is that my yoga teaching becomes my yoga practice, and I walk away feeling really energized. And that's because I'm not in my head. Instead, I'm there with a servant's heart, just serving my clients, serving my students. And the cues come because I'm looking at their bodies and seeing, oh, they need to spin their back heel flat to the mat and press into the outer edge of their foot, instead of thinking about what I'm going to say. Is this making sense to you guys?
Yeah. This is Heidi, sorry. I've had that same issue with my teaching as well, feeling when we were just reading that sentence, I was like writing on the side, I'm like, these are my issues.
So, which sentence do you mind sharing?
Oh, just the one that we just read about anxiety, performance anxiety, perfectionism. I mean, I've been graduated from my yoga teacher training for almost 2 years now, and I'm still struggling with lack of confidence, feeling like this anxiety or perfectionism, like I have to be like, know exactly what I'm doing before I go in to teach, and it's not true. It's the opposite. So
yeah.
I'm learning as I go, and I have creating safe spaces for myself to teach in that way. So I'm allowing a little bit more forgiveness and less judgment on myself in those moments. But yeah, I've noticed just one class at a time struggling with each of these things. So
great. I'm all excited that you're saying that, because what comes to mind for me is, Heidi, now taking what you're learning today into your teaching.
Yeah,
okay?
I'm excited.
So, yes, I mean, there's the opportunity, right? So every single class that you teach, that's an opportunity to strengthen this coaching muscle, I'm going to say. It's also a teaching muscle, right, to train that muscle. And that muscle is presence, so that there's no anxiety. There's no performance anxiety there. There's no worrying about having the perfect class, having the perfect session, having the perfect posture down, right?
Yeah.
You get to practice that. That's great. That's awesome.
It'll be very helpful, yeah.
So that last sentence there says, when you're comfortable and authentic, your clients will sense this and be more likely to establish their own strong grounding. This will be your client's basis for positive change and growth. We all know from studying energy centers in the body, like if you know anything about the chakras, for example, first chakra is all about groundedness and focus and stillness. And from that, obviously, we build creativity, second chakra, third chakra, self-confidence, power, putting action, taking those action steps, right? And then fourth is self-love and self-acceptance. And then fifth is trusting and really coming into alignment with truth. And sixth is your third eye center, and that's like your seat of intuition, inner knowing. And obviously up into seventh, which is enlightenment, and it's overall, I think of it as overall faith and kind of being able to embrace the larger picture. So my point with that is that the only way that we can get into those other qualities of being creative, being confident, being self-motivated, shifting into feeling like a victim, into seeing the opportunity even in the chaos or the problem. The only way we can get there, the only way our clients can get there, is through groundedness. And the only way that our clients are going to feel truly grounded in our sessions, I shouldn't say the only way, but one way, and it's a really influential piece in your coaching sessions, is that you're comfortable and that you're authentic, because your clients will mirror this. They'll mirror this, and then they'll be able to establish their own grounding. And from then, that's like from that point, that's where you go. That's where you flourish. That's where you change. That's where you start to see opportunity, possibility. Any other comments or questions? This is good stuff.
Carrie, I don't know if this will help again, going back to my massage.
Absolutely. Keep sharing those.
When in doubt, when I get a little frustrated thinking, I'm never going to fix this, of course.
Mm-hmm.
What always comes back to me is less is more.
Mm.
And they stress it again and again and again. Less is more.
Less is more. It's beautiful.
So you get frustrated, because this client just isn't going to where you think they should go again. It's your head, But just back, and they have to do what they can do. Less is more.
Less is more. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
what she just said, and this is Heidi, it reminds me of baby steps in that way. When you say less is more, it's taking it down to just one thing at a time. Less overwhelming.
Full of doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're not the other person. You know, that's why it's so important to not be attached to, oh, my client needs to do this next. This is what they should do to get to where they want to go. Because we're not that person. We don't know. And oftentimes we may think that there's an answer. Let's say that. We think that we have an answer to a client's problem, let's say. But when we're open and we're still and we're present and we're in that mind frame of less is more with our clients, they often come up with a solution that's way more effective. It's pretty fascinating. Great. So the now is really, really important, as our ancient yogic texts teach us that the now only exists. And meditation and yoga are really portals to the now. Our asana practice is really a continual refinement of staying present with the mind so that it almost feels like time stops. If you think about the definition of flow is to be fully immersed in the moment at hand, to be fully immersed in the task at hand, whatever it is that you're doing. When you're just being with whatever it is that you're doing, it could be running, it could be knitting, it could be yoga, you lose the aspect of time, but not movement. Does that make sense? You lose the aspect of time, but it's not that you stop moving. You continue to move, but you're present in each breath, each movement. In everyday life, practicing being rather than doing is a great way to strengthen this coaching muscle. Just sitting, just breathing, just eating, just driving. Those are different ways that you can find mindfulness. Like, it's almost like a mindfulness exercise in your everyday life. It could be in the shower when you're washing your hair, thinking about washing your hair and about the smell of the shampoo and how it feels. And it's kind of a cool experiment to take on, just those being really, really mindful with whatever you're doing and present with whatever you're doing. Okay.
Another, hey, Carrie, it's Jessica.
Yes.
Can I just add something to that? Sorry.
Yes, please do.
I was on mute for a bit with the baby.
That's okay.
That's okay. Thinking about consciousness and being completely aware, I was listening to this. It's like a little adding. Listening to this awesome conversation between two doctors. I cannot think of them off the top of my head at the moment, but I will. It's actually a little video online, and maybe I can send it to you to share with everyone. And
great.
It talks about the state of consciousness and awareness and how basically that, for example, like when you are in an awful example, you get into a car accident. And
okay.
Your mind just suddenly becomes so aware that when people say, oh, that happened in slow motion, I could feel everything. And that's because your mind suddenly is triggered to go, okay, I'm right now in the now. This is the only thing that's existing, and everything in your body becomes like hyper aware. And he was talking about how, you know, it's not the fact that time slowed down, but that you became, super conscious. You really fell into a state of awareness, as we're calling it, the now, and that it can be applied with practice and using, like you said, meditation as a portal in the everyday life, so that when you are really in the presence, really in the moment, really feeling everything, it is in a way as if time slows down because you're removing the distractions. So I really love what Heidi said earlier, which is very true. I mean, we are surrounded by distractions. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Texting, you know, whatever, iPads, iPhones, anything and everything, TV, magazines, and just ideas, media ideas. And so I found that, you know, just to add to that being it's very hard to be very conscious or very aware because, you know, your mind tends to be kind of like really a wild animal. If you really try to sit and meditate, it's very difficult to rein it in and to, like, harness everything and be, you know, very present. But I thought that that was really cool, and I'll find that link and send it to you because it's a really interesting conversation about consciousness.
Please do, and I'll make sure to share with everyone. That's great. Thank you for sharing, Jess.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Great. Okay. What creates a great class experience for you? This is my next question for you all. What creates a great class experience? And from listening to you guys talk and just share so far, some of the words that I've picked up are connection, authenticity, warmth from an instructor or a mentor or a teacher, compassion, when someone validates you, accepts you as who you are, when somebody is listening intuitively to you, whether it's a yoga teacher or just a teacher or a mentor or a friend, family member in a conversation, when that person is really grounded, right? That creates a good experience. And also, I think about the word empower, right? A great class experience, any kind of class, when you're learning something, is a good experience when you walk away feeling empowered. Do you guys all agree with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. So I'm going to ask you guys to just take about 30 seconds and write down what words come to mind. What does it mean to empower someone? And then we'll share. What does it mean to empower someone? Okay, Pat, do you want to start off by telling us your answer to that question? What does it mean to empower someone?
For me, empowering somebody is letting them come to their own realization of what their body can do for them. I give them a lot of guiding words when I work on them, and their aha moments are, oh, you know, if I just touch my neck here and press on it, and wow, I can do this myself. I don't need to go to her every time I have a problem. I can do this myself. And I think it's just the realization of knowing that they have the capability of doing anything they put their mind to it, but the mind has to be there.
Right.
And again, it's reaching for that power within.
Power within. Great.
This is Heidi. I think that giving people the tools to, like Pat said, figure things out themselves or to have that kind of like have a manual to like reference, and you're giving them those little bits of information that they can use however they choose, and that's empowering them by encouraging them and supporting them and believing in them.
Great.
Yeah, that's all part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Letting them believe in themselves.
Hey, this is Jess. So, like, I had written down kind of almost what Heidi said about giving them tools to be successful and allowing them to go through with you as support or guidance through their trials and errors and just being a leader and, you know, encouraging and until they reach that moment of success for themselves and then they feel that they got there themselves, and that would feel very empowering.
Ah, yes. Guys, this is all great. So this last statement that Jess made about letting them be successful themselves or experience taking a step that they decided to take and that they came up with and then having success with that, how motivating is that, right? And how empowering is that? That builds confidence. then that also builds that client's trust in the process. So let's say that a client comes to you and they want to get from point A to point B, but they want to take the smallest, littlest baby step. That is so important because they might take a baby step at first, gain confidence from taking that small step, and then have enough confidence to take flying leaps later on, right? And that comes from the inside out. So to empower someone, and that's what I think of, I think it's an inside out process to help someone be empowered. I think that empower should be in power, right? It's about finding the power within. I loved that Pat said that. And when we empower someone in coaching, it's by helping a person to align. It's about helping a person clarify their purpose, helping them to clarify their goals, helping them to grow and achieve meaningful outcomes. And remember that it's always client-focused. It's the outcome that they want, that they create, the steps that they come up with to take. Our clients, it's client-focused. Helping a person to become aligned, connected, and really inspired, aligned and connected to their higher self, their higher purpose, and that's what coaching is all about. Some other words that you guys said were encourage and support. And there are certain coaching skills, that specific coaching skills that we'll go through, that help to encourage your clients and help your client to feel supported. But presence is number one. Presence is number one. If we are not present, none of the other steps of the coaching model matter. None of the other coaching skills really matter. Presence is number one. It is the foundation. It's that presence that allows the coach to help the client create value from the inside out. It's presence that is the foundational element to co-creating a relationship, co-creating a solution. Presence is how we respond intuitively. We can't respond intuitively to our clients if we're not present.
Okay. Sherry, can I add something?
Yes.
I think something that really set in with me is basically giving the client the opportunity to be creative. And when, you know, someone's creative and creating their new experiences, what I thought was pretty cool is that it not only does it change your mind, but it actually does physical change to your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And so opening, like, new neurological pathways and neurotransmitter patterns, and I thought that that was pretty interesting to give them that tool to actually see growth with mind and physically in the brain.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we're going to get into a little neuroscience here in a moment, so hold on to that thought. I love that. And exactly, you know, creativity, it's really important to creating new synapses in the brain, new neural patterns. And if we're stifling creativity in our yoga, in our coaching sessions by telling our clients what to do, hijacking the agenda is something that I'll use a lot. That term, hijacking agenda, means that we're in our own head. We're, as a coach, we're attached to an outcome, and we're trying to manipulate the conversation, and we're trying to manipulate. And we might not even know that we're really doing it, but we're so focused on fixing the problem or more focused on performance rather than being there as a guide and holding the space, that we hijack the agenda and we stifle our client's creative process, really. And that will keep them stuck rather than create more open-mindedness, more confidence, which helps them to move forward. So all of that's really important. Okay. Three words I want you to write down right now. State, action, and intention. State, action, and intention. So let's define these words. And don't think too hard about this, but intention. What is an intention?
Yeah, it's just focus is the first word that came to mind.
Great. It's focus, right? What you focus on. And we usually, hopefully, we want our intention to be focusing on something that we want, right? An intention can be something that we want to focus on or something that we want to happen, something we want to create. So that's what intention is. And then state. What's state? Heidi, what comes to mind?
Your presence.
Good. Your presence.
In the moment. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Your presence, how you are in the moment, your being, your reactions, how you show up. Awesome. And then, Pat, action. You got the easy one, right?
yeah, I've got to think on this. I was back at the other one.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah, action is proceeding forward, but again, at the client's own pace, not our pace. We can direct them, but it has ultimately got to be where they are at.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So we can think about action as the task or the next step, or I think of it as, okay, this is where the rubber hits the road, right? So these three words make up the anatomy of results, okay? These three words, action, intention, state. It's the anatomy of results. And if you had to guess, like if you had to put a percentage to each one of these parts, which one do you think holds the most weight? Maybe one of them is 10%, maybe one of them is 75%, maybe one of them is 50%. Go ahead and take a moment and just write down, or if you want to make like a pie chart, what would that look like? State, intention, and action.
This is Heidi. I feel like they're all equal, but it's different in timing. Maybe one needs to be first in order to influence the next or vice versa.
Okay, great. Jess, what was your thought around this?
I'm like between two of them. All right, I think that for me, which one has the heaviest weight would be, I kind of want to say maybe the state, because where you are mindfully or in your presence, your awareness, where you are in your mind at the moment would begin to transition into an intention and then into an action.
Okay.
I don't know if that's right, but.
Okay, no, I'm asking you guys to share, so this is great. Pat.
And I feel the intention is, I had 50% down for that because I think it's all intention if you want to focus. And if you've got your focus there, your state, I feel, will come next. Although what Jess said, too, it was you, Jess, wasn't it, that said the state was the most important? And that is true. Presence is so true. But I think you have to have that intent, too. And I gave that a little higher value, and then state was a little bit higher than the action because the action would follow naturally.
Great. Okay. So this is all really good, and everything that you guys are saying is great. So research shows with the anatomy of results that state is the most important. It actually holds about 75% the weight. Isn't that crazy? That how we show up is the most important thing. That how we show up is the most important thing. And you're absolutely right that it kind of builds, right? And so your being, how you show up, your presence, that is the most important thing. And we think about your thoughts. So a thought happens, right? And then a story is created around that thought, or a story runs. And then that really dictates our state. So by showing up fully present with a clean slate, kind of clear mind, really grounded, right-left brain balance, that state is really the most important thing, because that will then lead to the intention and then the action too. We think about, I'm going to come back to the word samskara. It's a Sanskrit word, and it basically means neural pathway. And when we're trying to change those neural pathways, the thing that's most important in order for us to achieve changing those neural pathways and to be successful with changing our habits and changing our patterns and shifting our perspectives is our state. That comes first. Now, what regulates our state? Breath. Number one, right? If we can regulate our breath, we can regulate our mind. The mind mirrors the breath. So just by breathing, closing your eyes and taking a couple deep breaths, that will help to regulate your state. When we're able to regulate the breath, we're able to start to be aware of the thoughts in our mind, and then we're able to start to regulate our thoughts. And if we change our mind, we change our experience. We get to create our experience by regulating our thoughts. If our mind mirrors our breath, we can regulate our breath, therefore regulate our thoughts, therefore manage our state. And that's where we go, oh, I have a choice, and now I get to create the story. How is this sitting with you all?
Love it.
Yeah, I love it.
It's so simple, yet so complicated, right?
Wow.
Yeah, how
I
we...
It's like an onion.
Yeah, it's like an onion. So this is why we spend this entire first and second session of this 12-week process focusing on state and presence. I can't tell you guys enough how important it is that you take care of yourself and that you continue practicing your yoga, however you practice your yoga, and not just the physical practice, but the meditation and the breathing, and then eventually bringing that into your sessions, modeling that for your clients. That will set the stage, so to speak. That will set you and your clients up for success. How you show up, your state, is the most important piece. So let's talk about neuroscience. And here's where we're moving into some core coaching skills, okay? So one thing I want to touch on, and I said when you show up and you're really present, you're modeling that for your client. There's a thing called mirror neurons. Have you guys ever heard of mirror neurons? Anybody? So it's cool. And basically what it means is that when I'm in a one-on-one session with someone, and you should try this sometime in a conversation with a friend, family member, if I'm in a one-on-one session with a client and they're talking about something that's really emotionally charged for them, if I sit and focus on being really centered and balanced and present and maybe even just taking a couple deep breaths, their neurons, their mirror neurons, will pick up on that and start to mirror that. Crazy,
that is,
huh?
So cool.
Mm-hmm. So, wow. You feel this in a yoga class, right? If a teacher walks in and they're frantic and their energy is off, you know, that kind of sets the tone of the class, right? But if I walk in as an instructor or a coach and I'm really balanced and calm and open, that is going to transfer over to my clients, my students. So how you show up really is so important. The brain capacity to learn is, I mean, there's more and more research around this, and it's really, really exciting. The brain has a huge capacity to learn and change itself, and it's called neuroplasticity. And the results are usually tiny, incremental alterations or steps, I should say, in the neural structure that really add up as the years go by. And occasionally the results are dramatic. So what that shows us is that those tiny steps are really important. Those seconds during the day where we're taking that time to just be aware of our breaths and to be mindful of our breathing and regulate the mind, those are those incremental alterations in the neural structure that add up as time goes by. That's that repetition piece. This is how important it is to be the change, embody these skills as a coach, presence, awareness, mindfulness, groundedness. It's really, really important. And that is how you'll facilitate those aha moments in your coaching session. And it's those aha moments, remember, that really facilitate neural growth, so to speak, or those synapses, or the changing of the neural structure of the brain. It's through aha moments. It facilitates learning on a deeper level. It actually increases the neural excitation and consolidates that change. So you can think of when I have an aha moment, I'm having more of those synapses in my brain. And so the change is going to happen on a deeper level with those aha moments. So your experience matters. Your experience really, really matters. We have to be fully present to find depth of experience. Let's talk about change. So change is a hard thing for people. We talked a little bit about this last week. Change, and I think of change as like leaving your comfort zone. Change is going to introduce anxiety, trepidation, fear. It's important to know this as a coach when you're working with your clients. They are working on change. They are going to experience anxiety, trepidation, and fear. Because what's happening is you're working on leaving your neural pathways. You're working on changing those networks. And sometimes those feelings that come with change of fear, anxiety, trepidation, those are actually signs along the road that say you're moving forward. It's uncomfortable because it's new. So that's where validating your client's experience really helps. And also letting them move at the pace that they need to move at and keeping it client-focused. Energy is actually conserved when we do things the way we've always done things. Even when we do things and it's not working, it's not helping, energy is conserved. So on a neurological level, the body wants to, or the brain wants to, just keep doing the things the way we've always done them. When the systems within your body and your mind and your relationships become unstable, your brain literally produces uncomfortable signals of threat. And because you keep going and you keep changing to get from point A to point B, this is like the process of change here, those threats keep coming, those signals of threat keep coming. So that's where we have to shift our perspective. On the path of awakening, keep going. on the path of awakening, keep going, keep moving through those signals of threat and fear and trepidation and anxiety. And lots of little moments of practice, of one breath, one movement at a time, what will happen is over time, through change, through the chaos that comes naturally with change, you'll be able to increase those feelings of contentment, presence, groundedness, centeredness, insight. And that's where we're there to support our clients. That's what we're ultimately there to support our clients through that process. We're an accountability partner. We're helping them. We're holding the space through that process. Questions or comments? So a mentor coach, kind of to sum up a lot of our session today, a mentor coach serves as a guide to facilitate the client travel along these new paths to reach new goals. I'll say that one more time. A mentor coach serves as a guide to help the client to travel along a new path to reach new goals. We do not have all the answers. Coaching is about listening, being present, and responding rather than fixing or advising. When we're talking about coaching from the center, which is one of the master coaching skills. When we're talking about coaching from the center, that's your state. That's how you show up. It's about getting out of your head and being really present. It's about moving forward as a coach with a servant's heart. It's a co-creative process. It's about collaboration. It's about problem solving together, empowering your clients. One of the coach's role is to build awareness, to help their client to build awareness. Those mentor coaching tools in creating kind of a conversational sequence, you'll see this over and over and over again and how these tools, these coaching skills relate to your teaching skills as well and the tools that you give your students or that you use in your class. So keep all of that in your mind because your experience as a yogi, as an instructor, as a massage therapist, that's really created a powerful foundation for this new role in coaching that you're going to be taking on. You'll be able to draw upon your skills as a yoga student, as a yoga teacher, Pat as a massage therapist. You'll be able to draw on those skills over and over again, and therefore your coaching skills will be a lot stronger when you come from that place. So some of these skills we talked about today to reflect back, coaching from the center, how that creates space in the mind, space in the body. Your approach as a coach will set the tone and initiate habits that your clients will model and download throughout the course of your coaching session. So think about the mirror neurons there. So the tool or the coaching skill that always comes first is to center yourself and then help your client center. Center yourself and then help your client center. So you can think about how you can incorporate breathing exercise, meditation exercises, yoga exercises into your coaching session. This is what creates value from the inside out. Meaning this is what creates the fertile ground for an aha moment. And remember, those aha moments increase the excitation in the brain. There's more synapses going on. So it deepens the learning experience, literally. It deepens the groove in the neural pathway. Balance doing with being. Being fully present, listen, And then you'll know what questions to ask. Coming from the being place makes coaching more powerful, and the results will flow a lot more naturally when you're coming from that being place. So we think about the connection to yoga. We never want to muscle our way or force our way into a posture, because what happens, we'll injure ourselves. It doesn't work. Same thing with coaching. Just be. Be with the breath. Be with your client. Be present. Presence is the greatest gift that you can give. Okay. Responding intuitively. We talked a little bit about this. We can only respond intuitively when we're present. And responding intuitively is a knowing without knowing why. Coaching is not just about the questions and the answers and the solution. It's actually a pattern of intuitive response, okay? It's about the coach responding to the client, but a lot of that response is intuitive. So you tap into your hunch or your gut feeling, and you decide if that's useful to share with your client. And your language matters in creating space, and you might say, I have a hunch that I'd like to share with you to see if it's useful for you to consider, or I have a sense that I wonder if this language is more useful than saying, I think this. It creates more space. It helps them to open up and maybe shift perspective. Let's end with talking about the word agenda. The agenda is the intention. You can think about it as the intention. And this is what your client wants to carry forward. An agenda can be a client coming to a session and say, I want to be a good wife. I want to build my yoga coaching business. It can be anything that your client is looking to accomplish this week or that day, that month, that year. That's the agenda. So over the next week, what I'd like you guys to do is write down the word agenda and think of different agendas. And it might be that your friend calls you up on the phone and they happen to just naturally mention an agenda. They happen to say, you know, I really want to focus on this in my life. I really want to work on this. That's an agenda. So just being open and aware to when you're having a conversation with someone and you're focusing and really listening to them and they're bringing an agenda to the table. And this is going to help you guys see that there's opportunities to practice your coaching skills every single day, everywhere around you. So an agenda is anything that the person that you're talking to wants to focus on, wants to work on, a problem that they want to solve. Questions about agenda?
I have a question. This is Heidi. Do they have to be specifically stated, like, I want to work on this or I want to focus on this, or is it something implied?
It can be something implied.
Okay.
Right now it can be something implied. When we move into the first coaching step, which is clarifying the agenda, we're going to get into that next week, we'll need to clarify the agenda. So right now in your conversations, try to listen really intuitively and intently and being really present and seeing what it is that your friend or your family member wants to focus on. And you'll see how these opportunities come up all the time. And try easy, not hard, right? Just try to be open and listen for people's agendas to come forward. And remember, it's like their intention, what they're wanting to focus on. It happens all the time. It probably happens 50 times during the day. You'll be amazed. Okay, wrapping up here, Anyone want to share their biggest takeaway? And just maybe one person, because I want to be aware of everyone's time. Anyone have a takeaway, an aha moment?
Hey, this is Jess. I really loved the, what did you call it? Mirroring neurons? No, it was
mirror neurons.
Yeah, I thought that was so neat because you can really see it in a yoga class. You know, when a teacher comes in and they're really, and I've noticed this, and they're very centered and they're balanced and they're ready to start class, and you feel like you, you know, you're like a sponge, so you're taking in their energy. And then I've had teachers that come in, like you said, like very frantic and like, oh gosh, you know, the teacher just canceled and I just got thrown into the class. And you really kind of feel that. So I thought that was really cool to learn that.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Great. So practice over the next week regulating your state, regulating your state. Remember, it starts with your breath. It can happen by with your breath, your movement, your mind, your body, your heart, your spirit. It's all connected. So regulating your state, that's the most important thing. Please make sure to email me your bio if you haven't yet. You guys also have readings for next week. In your recap email that I will send out by noon tomorrow, you will have a buddy list and a coach the coach schedule. All right? So there's some important things that I'll put in this recap email. I'll also send a breakdown of the basic coaching model. Okay? And the very first step that we're going to focus on is clarifying the agenda. So in your conversations, in your everyday life, just look for the agendas that are around you that come up in your conversations. That will give you a great place to start class with next week. Thank you all for your time today, and thank you guys for being so interactive. This is great. And Mindy, I know that you're on mute today, and we're excited to have you join us next week. And then, ladies, I've also told you that we have three more students joining us next week that I'll be able to add into our conversations that we'll be able to learn from as well. So thank you all for being here, and I will talk to you all next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.